What do you hear when I ask you what food waste sounds like? I will tell you what I hear. The sound of mom or dad telling me to finish my supper because lots of kids in the world go to bed hungry. I hear scraping plates and the sound of old dinners sliding into the garbage. I hear my daughter's adorable but incredibly frustrating, "I don't want that," when we give her a lovely meal. I hear the garbage bin slamming shut after I throw out two-day-old unsold pastries at the coffee shop I used to work at. That everyday stuff, that is food waste to me, and maybe to you too. And just through that alone, it feels like we waste tons of food in Canada. And we do, millions of tons, actually, every single year. But all those sounds I just described, that everyday stuff, that is nothing, almost literally nothing, compared to where we're really screwing this up. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Lori Nicol is the CEO of Second Harvest, which is Canada's largest food rescue charity. Second Harvest commissioned a study about the scope of food waste in Canada and where it happens. And before we get to that, Lori, can you just first of all explain, what is food waste?
Well, food loss and waste is not what people think it is.
Okay.
I think people think table scraps and garbage. And unfortunately, it goes into landfill, but all it is surplus food that didn't get sold. Unsold excess food.
So not the remains of whatever from my refrigerator.
There, a piece of food waste is that, but it's a very small piece. Most of the food loss and waste that happens is much further up the supply chain.
Give me an example of some of the bigger forms of food waste that you see. Like what, from a supermarket, from a factory?
No, yeah. Supermarkets and restaurants, they have really low, like small margins. So they don't waste a lot, actually. We see a lot of waste at producers, at manufacturers, at processors, and that is because in Canada, we produce a lot of food for Canadians, far more than we can consume.
So give me a sense of the scale of it then. What did this report find in terms of how big a problem this is in Canada?
So we produce in Canada enough food to feed 52 million people. That includes imports. There's only 37 million of us. So we produce far too much food. Actually, there's only 34 million of us, and there's 4 million that are food insecure. So we just produce far too much food for our country.
How do you quantify what is food waste and what isn't? What is thrown out that could still be eaten? What is
Great.
Just discarded?
The way they do the research, because we were part of it, is really through surveys and working with industry, a lot of confidentiality agreements in place. And there is two types of food waste. One is avoidable and one is unavoidable. So from the Second Harvest perspective, we're really looking at avoidable. What is that food that we could absolutely either prevent from happening or redirect it to people? And what we learned in the study was of all the food produced, 58% of it is lost or wasted. And honestly, it's bigger than that. We have a broken food system. It wasn't designed. Our food system has not been designed. It's kind of grown organically through industry. And as Canadians, we've really lost the intrinsic value of food, just period. We forget that this is for nutrients and we look at it as commodity now. And that is a problem. So you look at it and you're like, well, I can always get another whatever it is at the store. So you don't even think twice about throwing it away because everything's replaceable.
When you say our food system is broken, what does that mean? What does it look like?
Oh, there's so many pieces that are broken in our food system. So just the fact that we have this amount of food loss and waste tells us a story that our food system is broken.
Right.
That nobody knew how much it was until we did this study. Another symptom that our food system is broken. And the reality is because we have so much food, like Second Harvest, we have a dual mission, no waste and no hunger. So we have all this food and we still have people that are food insecure. So it's not a food issue. It's an income issue for sure for food insecurity. But also, why aren't we getting this food to people in a way that is dignified and non-stigmatizing so that we can ensure everybody's fed appropriate, healthy food all the time?
I mean, maybe I'm just asking you the million-dollar question right now, but why can't we just do that? Are we not built for it? The food is there. Like, having too much food is not the worst problem to have.
Well, the challenge is we haven't measured it. So if this is the first time we've really measured it, then now we know the depth of the problem. And every business, industry, government, academia, everybody has to get involved inside of this. So we all have to be measuring it in a standardized way. So you don't really know you have a problem until you've measured it. And then you can manage it, which is so cliche, but it's true. So we would like all businesses, and I see them coming along to measure it. What is it? And it's not to get the food to Second Harvest. Honestly, we would much prefer you prevent it from happening than getting it to us, because the reality is we know that this food loss and waste is having a significant impact on our climate.
When you talk to companies about how this happens, what kind of examples do you hear? What does that look like on the ground when food goes to waste?
It really depends on what part of the supply chain you're in. So there are some of them are very, very much like if I'm a farmer and I produce more food than I have to, which a farmer has to do, they just retail it back into the ground often. And so they don't really consider it waste because it is being retailed back in the ground. It's building nutrients, and that's really, really good.
Yeah.
Some of them are just infrastructure issues. So old facilities, old equipment, lack of innovation, typically comes down to money. And some businesses are just really big. And so, okay, I'll give you a couple of good examples.
Okay.
One is around specifications on food. So different retailers have different specifications. So there is a retailer that will refuse a whole tractor trailer load of bananas if the temperature of the reefer is 1 degree off.
Mm-hmm.
But that's their specification. It really has nothing to do with food safety. So these specifications don't have anything to do with food safety. So you have farmers growing potatoes for the fall that have to be one size. And when they want them in the winter, they have to be a different size. Just in those instances, the same farmer, you're losing a whole lot of food. We also have contracts in place throughout the supply chain that say, okay, if you can't sell this food, then you must destroy it. And that was because they didn't want to have a secondary market. So if I'm giving you a whole lot of whatever it is, I don't want you to sell it to somebody else. You have to destroy it if you've gotten the money for it. What they didn't think of was, okay, we want you to destroy it or donate it. We just don't want you to sell it. So there's a lot of regulatory things that could happen with agriculture. There's a competitive nature to industry. So there's a big piece of that across the whole supply chain.
When you went back to companies after this report came out, were they surprised by the scale of it?
Yes and no. So I think what we were really trying to figure out is often it's the consumer that is blamed for all this food waste. And everyone's like, what are you as a human being, what can you do? And we all have something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see something on the news, you often see a retail store. But because we worked at Second Harvest, we're like, no. This food is coming much further up the supply chain. So the amount, absolutely shocking. But what was also shocking was we turned it on its head and said, it's not really the consumer or retailer. It's the producer. It's the processor. It's the manufacturer. So that was the big shock to everybody of where it is actually coming from.
I think intuitively, and maybe it is because of those pictures that you mentioned on the news, most of us do think of best before dates and tossing stuff out and, you know, I clean the fridge once a week. That's what we've internalized, right?
Right. But that's what we've been taught, right? Public health did us a great disservice with that adage of when in doubt, throw it out. I beg people not to do that because best before dates are arbitrary. They're put on by manufacturers. They don't have anything to do with food safety. There's only 5 foods in Canada that expire. And so when it's an expired food, absolutely, don't eat it after the expiry date. But best before, there's so much life left on food. And if you go to our website, foodrescue.ca, there is actually a pamphlet that will show you how long that food will last after the best before date.
I conflate expiration date with best before date all the time.
You and everyone else. So,
yeah.
So the expired foods are the following. Baby formula. And that is because children need the nutrients in it. If it's past the expiry date, you might put your child's health at risk. Products like Ensure, so meal replacements for seniors, because again, they need the nutrients.
Right.
Meal replacements in general, so even protein bars, if that's what you need. And the other two are by prescription only. So one is for a feeding tube and one is a dietary. So really, there's only 3 foods that expire that you can actually access at a grocery store.
And the other stuff, you just smell it and make sure it hasn't gone bad.
Use your common sense.
You mentioned earlier that we've come to take food for granted, which is what started this problem. How did that happen?
We have an abundance of food. So if you're speaking to an octogenarian, they will just be appalled when they hear this number because, you know, after the war and the Depression, food was incredibly valuable, right? So we were giving our protein to our soldiers and we all had gardens. Food was never taken for granted. Like maybe your grandparents, like mine did, use their tea bag 3, 4, 5 times until they couldn't use it anymore. And now there's just so much food. Like it's an industrial food system. We can get it pretty much anywhere. It's very cheap. Anyone can access it. So it's not as important. You forget that the intent of food is to nourish you. It's kind of a fun thing to do, right? Like, it's a convenience now.
If the biggest offenders are way, way up the supply chain, and, you know, we've kind of internalized that, oops, we're wasting food, how do we still get people to take the necessary precautions and not treat food as abundant and disposable and such, even though the data in your study would reveal that it's maybe not actually my fault as much as I thought it was?
We all still have something to do. And it's a whole behavior change. So how do you ensure a huge behavior change? And I would argue that's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
However, one thing that affects all of us globally and in Canada specifically is something called climate change. And we are feeling it in Canada quite faster than any other region in the world. We're, well, I think, 1.7 degrees warmer than we were in 1948. And if you're in the north, it's over 2. Mm. Food waste is a big contributor to that. So
how so?
The amount of GHGs that are attributed to food waste are exponential. So if food waste were a country, the GHGs would be third only to China, the U.S., and then the country of food waste.
Wow.
So it is very, very significant. So when people can internalize it that way, oh, this is actually affecting my climate. It's very different than some people might need to eat.
How much have the last couple of years of technology and apps and in the lobby of my building every week, there is a delivery of those food boxes, mm-hmm. and there's probably 30 or 40 people that subscribe to it. And I walk in the door and there are 30 to 40 stacked boxes of good food sitting there. How much has that contributed to the problem?
I don't know that that's contributed to the problem at all. I think
that's
that
really
might be one of the contributors to the solution. So depending on what box you're talking about, what it does is it provides you the adequate amount of food that you need. So you actually shouldn't have food waste. What the challenge is, I would say, was maybe packaging waste,
yeah.
where we need to look at that. But packaging is critical to food. It elongates the life of it. And food in landfill is far more damaging than packaging. We want to get rid of both. But I actually really like those meal kits.
Our producer will be extremely happy to hear this. She's smiling right now because she's recently joined the program. What's the best thing that I can do to eliminate the part of my lifestyle that is at fault? Should I not do huge shopping trips?
Exactly. Yeah, we have to stop bulk buying. I know we live in a very different age where everybody's very busy. And sometimes, you know, if you're living in Scarborough or Etobicoke or somewhere not as accessible to a local grocery store and you have to drive and you have to buy it for the week, just be very mindful. Buy less. You always, everybody's fridge, almost everyone's, goes through every once a week or twice a week.
Yep.
There's always extra food in there. So just start buying less, and I think you'll discover quickly that, oh, right, I don't need it. And you're saving money, too.
Is there a way we can hold some of the companies who are worse at this than others to account, or is it so far up the supply chain it doesn't really touch us at a retail level?
I think it touches us at every level.
Can we shop smarter? Are there better places than others for controlling the wasted food?
Everybody is doing their part. Like, Second Harvest has been partners with all the major retailers for many, many years. So one of the challenges is people didn't even know it was a problem until a couple of years ago. Mm. Like, and we're working with international players who work on climate change specifically. And even they didn't understand that food waste was a contributor, right? Until a couple of years ago. So the more you know, the better you do. Walmart actually does a really good job. They have a goal of 2025 to eliminate all waste. Mm. in their stores and across the supply chain. And why they're good that way is they're so big that they can drive the vendors on what they have to do. So I would say Walmart is doing, they're taking a step, Loblaws is taking a step. I see everybody trying, I just think we need to standardize it. So how can government get involved and regulate some kind of standardization of it? So you have to measure it. We have right. to know what it is. And then we can figure out solutions for it. We can get really innovative about it, but until you measure it and there's some leadership.
Well, that was my next question anyway, so you segued into it. Is that, like, is anybody in government right now on this issue? Is anybody studying it in Ottawa?
Yes. So this is exciting. I don't know if you're aware, but we have this wonderful thing called the Food Policy for Canada, which we've been working on for many, many years. And there is a specific role in that is food waste. They've actually even tied $20 million to look at innovations to manage food loss and waste. So that's huge for Canada. That's brand new, and that really just came about in the past couple of years.
What would it do?
Well, it just drives awareness to it. Mm-hmm. Like, one thing is awareness.
Right.
People just need to know. So thank you for having me here today, because people just need to know. So how they're going to allocate the money, I'm not sure. But I do know that when Value Chain Management International, Dr. Martin Gooch and myself finished the research, we went to Ottawa. We were requested to go to Ottawa to speak with agriculture, to speak with Stats Canada, to speak with the environment. So they really are taking it seriously. They're looking at it, and they're looking at innovations and solutions to manage it.
You're deeper in this than anyone. If you could allocate the $20 million, what would you do with it? What's the most pressing need for money right now?
Well, if it was me, I would definitely allocate some money to a new app called foodrescue.ca, which allows organizations to match surplus food directly with a mission-based organization in their community.
Hmm.
That's what I would love. But I think there's a lot more. One of them is really just measurement. I would say regulation is a big piece of it too, which is not necessarily giving corporations money. It is giving them mandates and getting them all in a room to say, okay, how are we going to fix this together? And if you need funding for it, what would that look like?
You mentioned back at the beginning of this interview that the last problem in the chain is removing the stigma from donated food. Explain mm-hmm. how that works and how that's going.
Well, I think it's going better. But I would argue food shouldn't be stigmatized, period, right? It's
yeah.
food is food is food. And so we have to manage how we've industrialized this kind of food and stigmatize people for accessing this food. So one of the things that we're doing at Second Harvest is, well, now we know there's food. We know where it is across supply chain. Maybe not exactly all the locations. So we are working on a study right now that is mapping out every food program across Canada. Food security or not, just food programming so that we can twin those two places together. Because a lot of this is language. When we say waste, you think waste.
Yeah, it's garbage.
It's not waste, though. It's surplus food. It's excess food. So it's very different. It's just unsold food. But the food that we get at Second Harvest is food that's never even made it to retail.
Right.
This is better than the food you're buying at your favorite grocery store.
If we're to have you back 2 or 3 years from now, and there's been significant progress made on food waste in Canada, what will have been the biggest move that either businesses or the government will have made?
Measurement. As soon as they know the problem, they can fix the problem. So measurement at industry, if it has to be regulated by government to get people to do that, super. If that happens and there's some leadership and some real solutions, and we have solutions that the research actually identified, solutions on how to manage this better, that would be incredible. And across Canada. I mean, the challenge with Canada also is we're just huge. So getting those kind of messages across Canada, and there's not a one size fits all, and we have to recognize that. So nothing, there's no silver bullet. I wish there was. But measuring it in different communities, you'll have different solutions.
Thanks, Lori.
No problem.
Lori Nickel, CEO of Second Harvest. You can find more big stories at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You know it's true because it's in the URL. You can also find us at frequencypodcastnetwork.com, at frequencypods on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at thebigstoryfpn if you just want to talk to us. If you like us, or even if you don't, because we do take criticism, hit us up with a rating and a review, where if you get your podcasts on Apple, Google, Stitcher, or Spotify, we will only listen to you if you are subscribed. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.